As we've seen all this hour, the American water crisis is not so much a natural disaster or a man-made toxic waste dump, but it is a collective realization that one element of proper American citizenship should be better understanding of how we get water, its natural cycles, the kinds of industrial and agricultural developments that threaten it, and that most importantly, bulldozers and filters can't correct all of the mistakes that can be made in a growing industrial nation. Robert Glennon, who we heard from at the beginning of this hour, says that Americans have to learn to live with the water we have and not live off some imaginary limitless resource we don't have. Robert Glennon is a Regents Professor at the University of Arizona and author of Unquenchable, America's Water Crisis and What to Do About It.
I'm optimistic, John. I don't think it's too late to fix things, but the crisis is real and it demands our attention. The water is still out there. We can't make water, nor can we destroy water. But the problem is it's not where we need it, when we need it, in the form that we need it.
And how would we address that? Does water policy strategically look for questions of shortages and that sort of thing? Or is the strategy that we've had up until now the assumption of an infinite amount of water and we're just adding pipes?
It's been the latter. It's been the assumption that water is plentiful. But there are a number of drivers of the crisis. One is that we have been using water in an unsustainable way. Population growth is the elephant in the room. The Census Bureau predicts that we're going to hit 420 million by 2060. That's an additional 100 million people we have to find water and other resources for. Energy demands are up. Climate change is challenging. So it's a set of factors that come together to make this very serious.
Is there a consensus in the United States on how to proceed? What institutions govern water quality issues? We've traditionally looked at things like the Clean Water Act as the arbiter of questions of water quality. But are those appropriate institutions?
Well, water in the United States is very fragmented. There are literally tens of thousands of drinking water systems, tens of thousands of water treatment plants. We have local institutions, state level, federal institutions. But the Clean Water Act, as you mentioned, has been a real driver in modernizing how we take care of human waste. In the 1970s, the federal government financed the construction of lots and lots of water treatment plants across the United States. But the money for that kind of effort has really dwindled almost to nothing. And now what we're seeing, and I think Flint is a microcosm of this, is a national crisis with our water and wastewater systems. We have over 1.5 million miles of pipes associated with water and wastewater. And the bill is coming due to replacing them. And unfortunately, it's been a situation of out of sight and out of mind. And Flint reminds us of what a problem it is.
Given that, how is it possible, going back to the Flint case, for essentially a small group of people to make a decision that has such an extraordinarily deleterious impact on the health of hundreds of thousands of people?
Well, I think that they're not alone. There are lots of people in position of power. In Flint, and I'm not following it that carefully, but you had multiple layers of regulators not acting as forcefully or as aggressively as perhaps they should have. It's not just confined to Flint, because we now all look wherever we live in the United States and say, well, gosh, what about my water system? And it casts doubt on the quality of the public drinking water supply, and that's really unfortunate.
If Flint raises awareness, is that a good thing? And how would you channel that awareness into concrete steps that would allow us to learn the lessons of Flint?
Well, I think, sadly, it is a good thing. And I think it's a real wake-up call. And I think we need to figure out the way to finance the modernization of water and wastewater systems. And that will not be easy. But I think an example, say, of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel with public-private partnerships, might be ways to generate the finances needed to modernize our systems. It's a very serious national issue, and I think Flint is the wake-up call that you referred to.
What's your solution? Do we ration? Do we create a set of priorities? In California, we've discovered that the advantage that agricultural interests had in their access to water has collided directly with consumer access, residential access to water. Do we need to revisit those categories?
Again, I'm optimistic. I offer a menu of options. Some of them are very simple. Conservation. It's the low-hanging fruit. So all of your listeners out there should know that every time they use their kitchen food disposal, they're using water. And if they use that disposal only 2 minutes a day, by the end of a month, they will have used 150 gallons of water just to get rid of food scraps. Well, multiplied by all the millions of households in the United States, that's a lot of water. So conservation's one. Reuse is terribly important, and we're not doing nearly enough of it, John. In Los Angeles, they have a huge treatment plant called Hyperion. It produces a volume of water equal to the seventh largest river in the United States, and virtually every drop of that water gets dumped into the Pacific Ocean. Well, we need to do better. And then two things that I'm arguing for. One is we need to price water appropriately. It's too darn cheap for people to take up and pay attention as to how much they use. So I argue for a human right to water for basic needs, and that's only about 1% of the water we use. And then I think we need to have an adult conversation about how to price the other 99%.
And do you think there's the consensus in America to actually accomplish something like that without divisive political debates and demonstrations and the kinds of scenes that are in the movie Chinatown?
Mark Twain once quipped that whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over. So we'll always have fights over water. But yes, I think so.
Some creative reforms and some challenging reforms proposed by Robert Glennon, who's a Regents Professor at the University of Arizona and author of Unquenchable, America's Water Crisis and What to Do About It. Robert Glennon, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure to be with you, John.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.